Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Joss Ogonige, Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booker County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And this is our interview for Christmas Day. And jolly old Santa Jay is in the person of Manny Two Feathers. And Uncle Manny comes from Aztec tradition. And welcome to the show, Uncle Manny. Tell the folks about yourself and your traditions, and if it pleases you, the prophecies.
Okay, hi, how are you, Blue Otter?
Hi.
Thanks for the call. You know, this is a rather difficult times that we're facing. I have children that are... one of them is still in grade school, and one just turned a teenager yesterday. And the thing about it is, you know, I don't foresee a very positive future for all of us. And I'm not a prophet. I'm not anybody of any importance. But in my years of beating around the world and you know, having my bouts of alcohol and diabetes and different things like that, I've learned a few things. And all my life, I've believed that we as human beings are, I don't believe there's a heaven or a hell, except the one that we live in here now. We make our own heaven. In other words, we make things as beautiful and as nice as we want here in this life, or we can really make life miserable for ourselves. And that can be our hell. But as far as predictions, you know, all I've got to go by is I know that my people, the Aztecs and the Mayan people, which although they were a different nation, they were integrated to warfare, to marriages, to captives, to, you know, and I don't think there's any very many pure bloods anymore of any nation, of any tribe, anymore. And I know that the Mayans, and both the Mayans and the Aztecs, our calendars only go till the year 2012. And it stops now. Why is that? I've asked myself that question many, many times. And then I watch the news just like everybody else. But the main thing I do is I'm watching what the scientists are recording, because our people in the old days were very much into science and to the movement of the stars and the heavens. But they also knew they could predict things to happen from the movement and the celestial movements of the stars and the planets and stuff like that. Everybody, a lot of people, I'm sure you've heard of Blue Honor, where people say that the edge of the American continent might go California edge is going to slide into the ocean. They say that a meteor will hit Earth and kill us off the way it did the dinosaurs, because there's no sun, no vegetation, no nothing for several hundred years and things like that. But I personally believe, I don't know if you've been listening to it, but there's some rumblings going on within our Mother Earth, because I think she's tired of us abusing her and not praying the way we're supposed to. And those rumblings that come in the way of earthquakes, and I think if there is a catastrophe coming to this Earth, it's going to be from Mother Earth releasing her energy, her pent-up anger, if you will, at our people and over. I think it's going to start around Yellowstone National Park, what we call Yellowstone now, because that's a really high volcanic area. And when that energy is released, it's not going to be from an exterior force that's going to end this life as we know it today. I think it's going to be something from within rather than from without. It's a scary thing to think about. And the only thing that we can do is, and I don't know if it's too late or not, but pollution's got a lot to do with it. The ozone's got a lot to do with it. We're quite literally exterminating ourselves with pollution and things that we put into the air. And I personally have looked at it and my only and strongest solution has been prayer, because I've been sun dancing for many, many years, and I run sweat heart ceremonies all the time, and to me that's the high peak where we can stand and let the Creator listen to our prayers. And through prayer I think we can solve all these problems, but then we still have to get on top of that, we have to get scientific with, you know, like where do we go with these fossil fuels, you know? And I hear a lot of people protesting that we're at war, that we're doing this, we're doing this in Iraq, that we're doing all this for oil. And everybody, what makes me laugh and makes me wonder, is that every one of those protesters, not a one of them walked to the protest. They all drove there. And you know what? We've got to start with ourselves. And this is a miracle. My wife was showing me this monkey sticker that says, walk this talk. And she said, do you want to put it on the back of your van? And I said, no, because I don't walk my talk. I said, I'm as guilty as everybody else. We're protesting, yes, we are there, you know, protesting the use of gas and oil, the war because of it. I said, when we're all driving to the protest, none of us take the time to look at what we're saying and follow what we're saying. We're saying one thing and doing another. Personally, myself, every time I get into my truck or my van to go anyplace, I take the time to buckle myself in first before I start my van and I get it moving. I know it doesn't make a hill of beans when I do it. But can you imagine if a million or 10 million people did that? In those few seconds that you have to, most people get in their car and they start it, and it takes them 5 to 10, sometimes 15 seconds, half a minute, to make sure that the kids are all buckled in, to make sure that everything is right before you take off. Well, and to buckle in. If we all buckled in first, and then made sure that everybody's ready to go, and then start the car. Those few seconds, if a million people did it, I don't know, I have no way to do the research. So we're talking maybe 15 to 30 seconds. But if, like I said, if a million or 10 million people did it, can you imagine how many tons of pollution we'd eliminate out of our atmosphere? And a lot of people don't think about it, but they'll start their car, or they'll stop and talk to somebody, and they leave their car running. You know, this is just one little thing that we could do. I could see the time, water, that they're going to make engines that'll come up to a stop sign, and they'll automatically stop if you're idling for more than 5 seconds. Because to save the kind of pollution in the air. And then that goes up into the atmosphere. And when it comes out, where does it come down? It doesn't come down into a trash can. It comes down into our water. The water that we want to drink, that we need to drink. And that's another point. I do a lot of traveling. Here at home, I asked my kids, don't flush the toilet just because you went crinkle. But if you did a serious thing, well then, it's all right.
Like Sunbury used to say, if it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down.
You know what? I've been saying that for 30 years. Yeah, exactly. And the thing about it is, you know, if 3 or 4 people use it, you know you're wasting 2 gallons of water to flush down half a pint of urine.
Yeah, if that.
That's ridiculous. This is ridiculous. Because of the simple fact, now it was a scientific fact that I heard on National Geographic or something, that only 2% of the water in this world is drinkable. And that's pretty heavy duty. You know, there's a lot, billions and billions of gallons of water, but we can't drink it. There's just a few, and 2% is still a lot of water. But you know, No, another thing that I do at home, and my kids do it, my wife does it, we get in the shower and we shampoo our hair, and then we get ourselves good and wet, and then we get the soap, and we shut the water on. And we scrub down the scrub. We can take the time then scrubbing down, and you know, and I mean, sometimes to the point that I start drying off before I turn the water back on. In the meantime, I've saved 10 gallons of water that didn't go down the drain because I was just standing there letting it hit my back while I'm scrubbing my front and my feet, you know. And if people practice more of these little things like that, you know, we could save a lot of water. And you know, just because you're in a motel room and you're not paying for the water or for heating up that water, doesn't mean you still have to waste it. You know, I go in there, and if I'm staying two nights, I tell them at the front desk, I said, you don't have to take my sheets tonight. And if I can, I'll use a towel both days, you know, because I know at home I don't change my sheets every day. And I don't get a clean towel every time I take a shower. I'll use it two or three times before I put in the dirty clothes, because that's going to be drinkable water up to the water. And even though you're not paying for it, you know, I mean, you're paying for the motel room, and it's not your bill. I mean, it's not going to be the money coming out of your pocket to pay for the gas bill and the electric bill or whatever it is, you know, that the motel gets. Still, we've got to look at the fact that we're just going away what God gave us. And
well, the other thing too, don't mean to interrupt you, but you know, the more sanitary we try to keep, or actually encouraging in the long run to make us sicker, because people that live in countries that are dirtier actually have more resistance to disease.
Exactly.
Much of a good thing.
Well, you know, I don't care how much you scrub down. And now this is a scientific fact too, that we're full of microscopic little bugs that are helping our bodies keep clean, and they live on it, you know, and there's nothing we can do to get rid of them. And like you say, in fact, with too much sanitation, you weaken yourself because you've got no immunity to germs and diseases, you know. And like you say, there's kids down in South America and in Asia and in Africa that drink water right out of the puddles on the street, so people sit and walk and urinate and everything else, and there's... Well, they might not be as healthy as we are, in one sense of the word, but they're stronger than we are because they could fight off the disease, like you say, you know, it weakens us, you know. But the thing about it is the waste of, to me, the big issue is the waste of water. You know, we overindulge ourselves with food. We do so many things wrong here, you know, just a bunch of spoiled little kids, you know, if you want to put it that way. But, anyway.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
OCO is Cherokee for hello. This is Chia Sagonige, also known as Will Bluewater. I'm the International Communications Director for the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. I'm speaking on behalf of the Seven Clans and beloved woman Sharon Rogers, wife of Chief Priest and Principal Chief Charles L. Yatlohi Rogers, MD, oncologist. Their family discovered the tomb in Mexico of Sequoia, the world-famous inventor of the Cherokee alphabet and the namesake of the Cherokee National Forest in California. The state of Oklahoma was very nearly named the state of Sequoia. Nación Cherokee de Mexico, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, is known in the United States as the Cherokee Nation of Sequoia of Mexico, Texas, and the USA Reservation and Church. Free of any charge, we are accepting citizenship and adoption applications, not only from Cherokee descendants, but from all people of good heart, from all lineages, just as we did for the 10,000 plus years before the United States government fairly recently imposed restrictions on Cherokee citizenship. Tennessee Governor Sam Houston had not one drop of Cherokee blood, yet he left office and later became Kalanu, or Speaker of Council, second only to Chief John Jolly of the Cherokee Nation West. The Republic of Mexico has recognized the Cherokee four times since the 1700s, and Spain five times before that. We possess original physical copies of all those treaties. In January of 2001, the San Andres Accords, enabling government-to-government tripartite relationships between sovereign Indian nations and the government of Mexico, were passed by the Mexican Congress. A few weeks later, the first such sovereign Indian nation, Nación Cherokee de México, was federally recognized in a solemn ceremony in Torreón, the capital of the state of Coahuila, formerly known as the province of Coahuila in Texas. The ceremony was followed by a fabulous celebration, which was attended by Cherokee elders from all over the Americas, including citizens of the federally recognized Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, people like Squaw Yee, the famed bowmaker, Al Heron. There is so much more to share with you, so I encourage you to visit our website at CherokeeDiscovery.com. While you are visiting the website, feel free to fill out a free citizenship application. Please be patient, though. We have no paid staff, and applications may take up to 9 months or more to get processed. If you're not a Cherokee, feel free to request adoption. And please don't forget, tell them Blue Water sent you. Ski. Wado.
I come from Aztec, and there's some Yankee in my blood, my dad said that we even had some passable relatives in Sonora and Mexico, and just recently I found out that my grandmother on my mother's side, she passed away when my mom was only 6 years old, but she was buried in the Mission Cemetery in San Gabriel, California. And then I found out, about 5-6 years ago that we might be part Gabrielino also, because they never allowed anybody to be buried in the graveyard unless they were Native people, unless they were members of the tribe, and we're in the process of trying to find out. So, there's such a mystery in me and I'm a true mixed brother, I'm a true Métis, and in all the senses of the word, because, and it's not my fault, but what the heck, I'm proud of every bit of it, and this is another, getting away a little bit from the environment and from the predictions of what's going to happen.
Hey, this is your show. You talk about what spirits told you to talk about.
But anyway, I've been Sun Dancing for quite a few years, and I was very honored that the Shoshone people up in Fort Washington, Wyoming, let me Sun Dance with them for 4 years. Excuse me. See, that's the guy I had before. Anyway, and then I was very honored because I had a vision during the second Sundance with him. The vision told me to go to the piercing ceremony, and I went to the Lakota people in Rosebud, South Dakota, and I Sundanced for 4 years with an elder named Norbert Running there, and he honored by letting me dance with him, and I danced for 4 years with Norbert, and then I danced for quite a few years in Pinelake with another sun dancer, David Swallow Jr., a good man. He was a good teacher and a good, he encouraged his sun dancers in a good way, to follow his path. And I believe that he don't do that by accident, and I don't believe that we choose to do it because there's a lot more fun things to do than go to sun dancing. And you go through the ceremonies of thirst and hunger, I've had my visions, and for the last 5 years, I've been running my own sun dance. The first 2 years was in Oklahoma, and we lost the land, so we couldn't keep going there, so we moved our sun dance to here to southern Pennsylvania, western Pennsylvania. And we've had it going now, what I call a mixed blood Sundance. It's a word that I coined myself. It used to be, if you spelled it out, if you said those words, they were two separate words that were spelled M-I-X-E-D-B-O-O-D. And I coined, reconstructed the word, made it into one word, and I spelled it M-I-X-B-L-O-O-D, so it's one word, a mixed blood, because there's no real word for us here. Are you any kind of native, Bulaar?
I'm about a 64th Cherokee that I can prove.
Okay. Well,
who knows what else?
Well, you find yourself, but see, you know, one of the old chiefs said, either you're native or you're not.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter. The blood quantum was established by an Englishman. And I don't know why the native people still try to follow that. You know, either you are or you're not. And because this Englishman took some natives to England to show them off, you know, like his pet puppies or something. And he says, this one right here is a full blood. He's from so-and-so, I don't know, we call it blood nation. It was from, but this is the daughter of a Frenchman, so she's only half. And that started that whole blood quantum thing. Well, let me tell you a little bit about that also. Now, there's a doctor in Stanford University. His name is,
That's okay.
66.
I'm only 50 and I do it more often than you do.
Anyway, he did a lot of research on blood types, and he found out that the native people from here, from South America through up to Alaska, we had one strain of DNA in our blood that's not found in any other native people. Excuse me. It's not found in anybody else except native people. And it's not found in African Americans or in Caucasians or Asians or anybody like that. It's only found in Native Americans. And the thing about it is, and he said, it doesn't matter if you only have one drop of native blood in you. He says, that strain of DNA will show up. And without knowing what he was saying, that elder, and I think he was a Lakota elder, said, either you are or you're not.
Well, that's what our Atikulakula, or Atikulakula, was one of our head chiefs. He was back by 1750, and we had a little different system. This principal chief thing is an English creation, but he himself, they call him the little carpenter because he was so good at putting together treaties. He was a real statesman, but he himself was an adoptee of Cherokee. He was actually from one of the tribes up in Canada. He was kidnapped and later in life, he went and spent time with him. But he is the one that said that it only takes one drop of blood to be considered a Cherokee. And the tradition was out to the 11th generation, you know, or a 1024th. Mm-hmm. One 1024th was all it took to be, you know, and that itself is figurative. So it's just one drop.
Yeah, exactly what I'm saying, and I had never heard of that. And so the thing about it is, the biggest thing is that you have to acknowledge yourself as a native. And with the Métis people, the mixed blood, if you call yourself a native or a mixed blood, and you recognize as such by your village, and your village doesn't necessarily mean where you live, but the people you associate with, that's your village. If they recognize you as native, then you are indeed native. And, you know, and I know that a lot of the so-called full bloods refer to people like yourself, people that are fly-conflicted or light-conflicted, that say, well, I'm Cherokee, or I'm Choctaw, or I'm Blackfoot. They say, oh, you're just a wannabe, and that's wrong. You know, it's very wrong. And I've heard this too, that there's a lot of Sun dances where they don't allow, quote, quote, white people into dance. You know, even if they claim a native part of them. And you know what? I've never heard or seen where the Creator said that any of these ceremonies belong only to one people. And he said, from what I understand, even in the Lakota language, they say the Sun Dance and the Sweat Lodge and that the ceremonies, that they belong to the people. He never said to the Indian people. He never said to the white people. He never said to the black people. He said, the people. And then he would all say, all my relations will be going in and out of the sweat line, or the even in the Sun Dance. Who are we referring to? Are we referring to only the native people? Or, you know, because everybody that's on this planet is a relative. We're all related. And this is, it's just, gosh, I got so many things that I want to talk about, but anyway, that's just some of the things that I've learned through years. And this is when I was dancing up with the Lakota people, and they really honored me by letting me dance with them, it got to the point where I saw a lot of younger people not showing the respect that they should for elders, and a couple instances, they tried to use me as the better one of their jokes, and I was just sitting around and walk away. I didn't pay attention to them. It kind of killed the fun out of their jokes, and I thought, man, I don't need this in my life. You know, here I go through a lot of time, expense, and worry, and driving to come over here to pray and to dance in this way, and to just be the butt of somebody's joke. So that's when the Creator said, hey, it's time to start your own for the mixed blood people. And I'll tell you what, I have a lot of your Cherokee brothers come and dance with us over here in Pennsylvania, and a bunch of them dance with me there in Oklahoma. Every year it gets a little bit bigger, the Sun Dance, and as long as God gives me the strength enough and the courage to keep on doing it, I will, you know.
I know Ed McGaugh. I think Ed would be proud of you.
Oh, I know Ed. I know Ed well. He's, we email each other once in a while, and he's a mixed blood. He's a Lakota, but he's also a mixed blood. I can name you a bunch of Sun Dance people. I won't say any names, but I'll tell you what, I know a bunch of them that run around, and they're I don't understand how they have been discriminated against for so many years, and now they, that they're in a place of power, they discriminate against others. I just don't know, I don't see the justification. They discriminate against people that look too white. They discriminate against people that are gay.
Let me tell you a little, not to interrupt, but I got to tell you this story, Uncle Manny. Got a good friend from Pennsylvania. Name's David Wilson, and he is a Lenape descendant. But he's 6'4", blue-eyed, red-haired. And he, back in 96, just after the two deities appeared at Rocky Ridge, the two Navajo deities appeared, the following summer, the Sundance, which had been held up there for about 50 years, was held. And David had been invited by a leader of the Native American Church, Alan Nezkai, who was a well-known Diné Navajo leader, who had been a Christian minister and had been so badly treated by his fellow Christians that he went back the old ways and became a Native American Church minister. But anyway, Alan had been going over to the Sundance over at Rocky Ridge for many years. He took Dave with him, and they wouldn't let him dance. To make a long story short, they were driving him out of the sweat. They were giving him the wrong times to show up for the preparatory sweats, and just threatening to steal his pipe if he didn't leave. So David went to Leonard Crowdon. Now Leonard was presiding there, but he wasn't running it. And Leonard said, "Well, there's nothing I can do." So he invited him to go dance at Crowdon's Paradise, and became David's uncle. But interesting thing that happened though there was that they had black people, they had Mexican people, they had Japanese people, Oriental people dancing there, but they wouldn't let David dance just because he was white.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
discrimination.
The funny thing is that the creator got revenge for David because during the just before he left, he went over and visited the Japanese who were over to Sundance, and Japanese were telling him that they were cooking something over the fire, and he says, "Oh, what you cooking?" And the Japanese guy says, "Well," he says, "there's this dog running around, you know, and we cooked him, and we're barbecuing him, and isn't he good?" And David says, "Oh, by the way, did you happen to give any of this to the Sundance Chiefs?" "Oh yeah, they ate it." And he said, "Well, did they know what it was?" And the Japanese guy says, no, they sure didn't." You know, they want the last thing any Diné person wants to eat is coyote. It's like that. It's the worst medicine there is for it. So,
They won't even touch the coyote.
Well, they ate it during the Sundance.
Oh, boy.
Creator got a back.
Yeah.
Creator got a sense of humor, but go ahead, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Anyway, so, you know, this is why I started my own Sundance, and because here there's no discrimination, here there's no, there's nobody too white or too black or too red or not red enough, you know, everybody's deceived and treated with respect unless they show otherwise, you know, and we honor everybody and...
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding,
does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
But anyways, I'd like to get into something else now. One of the things that I really feel proud of myself and have accomplished in my later years. I'm 66 years old. I'm an elder, and I can't get around too good anymore sometimes. And my legs hurt, and my hips hurt, and my knees hurt, and my head hurts. And, you know, just I live from one thing to go to the other sometimes. But I still pour lodges. In fact, I mentioned this Sundance that live down in Florida. They come all the way from Florida to Sundance with me. They've invited me to come down and kind of oversee everyone in the afternoon, and they want to have one in the evening on the 30th of December, and then they want to have one at midnight, and then they want to have another fourth one at daybreak on the 1st. And so we're going to say goodbye to the old year and welcome the new year with ceremony. And they asked me to go down there. Well, first thing I said, well, you know, I said, I don't have the money to go down there to Florida, you know, from Pennsylvania. And so they took up a collection, and for me to, you know, for my expenses, for my motels and gas and food, to get down there to oversee the ceremony. But I told him, I said, well, look, I said, I don't know if I can run that many threats. And I said, for you guys, and all of them have done over four or five Sundances, so they're well qualified to run. So I said, so you guys are going to have to, I'll run one, I said, but you guys have got to run the other. They said, okay, we'll do that. So that's where I'm going. But my other accomplishments as an elder, just been, I'm pretty grateful to my wife, because she's been a lot of my inspiration and my pressure, you know, in making me know when I was, she kind of laid back and let me do my things whenever I feel like. In fact, she's always telling me to lay down and rest. And I said, I'm not that sick, I'm not that old, I don't need no doctor. But anyway, I've written four books, and I've been writing my first one until about 8 years ago. And the name of that book is My Road to the Sundance. Well, this has had a real good success. It's on the fourth or fifth painting. We've updated it a couple times. Like the first time that I wrote it, it only had, now it's not a how-to book. I've never tried to teach anybody how to stand down, and it's not a book that, that's telling people, come on and stand down to it. You know, it's not a propaganda book. All it is what's happened to me. And I put it on paper. What happened to me to pull me onto this road? The reasons that I had, I shared. And which is another point I want to clear up. I know a lot of people say that it's that your reasons you shouldn't share them with anybody, and that your reasons are personal, that you should keep it to yourself. You should, if you want to share them with anybody, you should only do it with a medicine person that's going to maybe interpreted for you, you know, and tell you what they mean. And, but you know what? I as an elder, I'm entitled to my own opinion and to my own way of looking at things. If you stop and look at everything that happens in a person's life, they're either dreams or visions. And to me, if you have a vision that includes others, then it's no longer just your vision, and you want the others also. In other words, if you have a vision, it's like, oh, well, take Blue Harvest, for example. You're sitting there, you have a vision, say, you have a weekly, baby program, I don't know what it is. You had a vision to speak to others by myself and get them on tape and release their words to maybe try to help a younger person with their words and what they have to say. You had a vision to do this. If you would have kept it to yourself, where would you be at right now? But you had to share that vision with others, because when you wanted to speak to others and get them to say their words of wisdom on the air for you, then it included other people, and it no longer belongs to the Blue Harbor, it belongs to all of us.
That's right. And be sure and stay as close to that mic as you can, where you're fading a little bit.
Okay. Oh, my phone was dropping a little bit. do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, sure.
And this is why when I had my visions, it included other people. And I couldn't keep it to myself. And the thing about it is, what do we do every time we sundance, every time we vision quest, every time we sweat in the sweat lodge? We're asking for guidance. We're asking for visions. We're asking for direction. Yet, if you get it to a vision and don't follow it, well then, what the heck are you doing these ceremonies for? If you're not going to do what you're being told, then you might as well quit doing the ceremonies. That's the way I look at it. And so, you know, maybe that's a little radical, but I don't believe so. You know, we're praying for things, and if the Creator brings us what we want, what we're asking for, and then we don't follow it, we might as well not even pray for it. But anyway, I had a vision to write this book, My Road to the Sundance. And I, like I said, I put on it just what's happened to me. I mentioned only first names with a lot of people, and I only had one person get upset because I'd used their name, and they sent me a nasty letter, so the next printing, his name was out of it, you know, so. But the thing about it was that most people, in fact, my son, that chief, I only put his first name, and when he read the book, because I let him read it to approve it before I got it printed, he said, if you're going to use my name, use my full name, he said, because I'm proud of who I am and what I do. So that's why I put his full name. And then, you know, like I said, we've revised it a couple of times, and I did the last revision here, I don't know, about a year and a half ago, and I'm not going to revise it anymore. We can only go to the tree so many times before it starts getting old, as far as people that, you know, that are reading the book. But it's a wonderful book. Can I say prices anyway?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And by the way, folks that are listening along, you can go right now on the page that you're listening to Manny Two Feathers. There are links to his website. There are pictures of his book. There are pictures of his crafts, pictures of his stone people. All you have to do is click on any of the crafts of the stone people or his book and take you right over to the website where you can order his book. But go ahead, Uncle
Tom. Anyway, well, this is what I was going to say, because I'm sure on the website you have the price on there. And if we get the order here at home, which we would through the link, I would personally, autograph personally for you, or if you want to make a gift, I would just tell me who to, and our link will take you to, I think it's PayPal, which will take your credit card, and you can pay with Visa, MasterCard, American Express, any of the major credit cards, I believe. But anyway, when we get the order, what we do is, I assign a book perfect to yourself or to whomever you want. And it's a really good book. I've gotten a lot of, thank goodness people take the time to email me or to write me and tell me how the book's changed their life in a very positive way. And so I'm grateful for that. And just recently, oh my goodness, what was it? About 5-6 months ago, maybe not even that long, I finished another book. It's called, and I did one that was called Stone People Medicine. And I've got one that's not, it's finished, but I need to polish it up. It's called Warbo. It's a fiction story about a Native warrior. And I won't say anymore because it's pretty interesting reading, but I'm working on that one, trying to polish it up. And maybe we'll release it now in the spring of next year. But the one I was just going to tell you about was the Coco Pelli Dream. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Coco Pelli, the what people call the hunchback flute player. And actually, from what I've been able to gather, he wasn't a hunchback, but he used to carry his robe, which was a robe or an alkite, later on in later years, an alkite, and he was given so many gifts that he couldn't carry them in his hand, so he'd put them in this robe, and he would hook it over his neck or over his shoulder. And anybody knows that if you're carrying a pretty heavy load behind you and something, and even a backpack or a knapsack, if it's heavy enough, you have to lean forward because of the weight to compensate for the weight behind you. And then consequently, when his pack was full, and he would be leaning forward, and from a distance he would look like a hunchback, but he wasn't. And but anyway, a lot of you are familiar with, and the ones that are not, I ask several questions. I ask, why of all the millions of people that live in the Western Hemisphere, why is he one of the few that is still remembered today? You know, why was this likeness carved and chiseled into stone cave and caves and cliffs on cliffs? You know, how did he make such an impression on people that they wanted to record his passing or his staying there, and that with those people that did that in that village for any length of time? You know, I mean, we remember Montezuma, we remember Oliochi, which is pretty recent, you know, in the 1800s, 1600s. But this guy was here like 2,000 years ago, I don't know, 1,500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. Nobody really knows who he was, where he came from. But this book also was a vision, a dream that I had, I dreamt that I was sitting down and his spirit walked up behind me, or appeared behind me, and although I didn't see anything, I heard a voice tell me to write the story of his life through my eyes. And it was almost like in the dream, I knew that it was his spirit that was behind me. And I asked him, well, how can I write anything about you? How can I do life if I don't know anything about you? And he says, don't worry, just sit down and start writing. Everything you need will come to you. Well, unfortunately, a lot of it came to me, but not everything that I needed, because I feel that the book is incomplete. But then one of my very human faith kicked in. I wanted to get it out before Christmas, before this big book show in Chicago. So I hurried it up, and you know, when you hurry, you don't get everything done that you want to do. And so consequently, and I would, if you don't mind, I'd like to read a little bit about...
Absolutely.
This is out of the book. Well, this is a review from Midwest Book. Midwest Book. They do reviews for a lot of people. I'll read that. A Book of Fantasy. Coco Perry's Dream is a fictional journey of the legend of Coco Perry, the flute player. Coco Perry's image has been found in South Central and North America and beyond, but it is not known who he was nor where he came from. His image and legend survive with vigor even today. Written with simplicity, the author explains him well. A story inspired by a dream the author had and witnessed though he walked and lived Coco Perry's life. Anyone interested in legend, especially of the Americas, will enjoy this tale this tale of life of a man or a spirit who wandered the Americas long ago, spreading the concepts of compassion, peace, love, sexuality, and spirituality, but whose origin and end are unknown. The legend has traveled down through the ages and is a fascinating read. However, be aware that this book is for adults only, as there are several explicit sexual situations included. When entering the sweat lodge, the Temascales, which is the word that we use in Spanish for a sweat lodge, Temascales. When entering the sweat lodge, we would stop at the door and say the word, "Home the tail." It is hard to translate, but it was brought to us to thank the Creator for all that there is and for all duality. The good, the bad, the day, the night, the female, and the male. In other words, the balance of life to life and all that exists.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
So, I read the review in that bottom paragraph as to one entry in the sweat line. That's out of the book, and it's a very interesting book, and let me see if my wife, I'm the author, but I'll tell you what, she goes to the painstaking problems of entering
sure.
the computer and correcting it, and she knows more about it. She's also my publisher. Here she is, so she can give some of her comments. Thanks.
Sure.
Hi, Blue Water.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. And you?
I'm doing fine. Good to talk with you again.
You too.
What are you going to tell us about today?
Well, this is, this project, that was given to Manny by, we think, Capitelli's spirit, is a very important and timely, effort. People now really need to read this message, even though it was, set in such a long time ago, even though it's a fictional story. There's a lot of elements of the story that are very timely for today's climate. Compassion for others. And also, I really feel that it will help heal a lot of men. I think there's been a lot of male bashing in the last, probably since the feminist movement began. And they may get in trouble with my sisters, but there has been a lot of male bashing, and perhaps some of it's been justified, but I don't feel that it's been justified for all men. I think a lot of men are very sensitive, and I think they're more complicated than they're being given credit for, and I feel that this book will help to heal a lot of men in that, as Coco Pelli travels and he has, some sexual encounters, you know, it's an adult book, but in his sexual encounters and his experiences and his travels, challenges that are presented to him, I feel, being the editor and publisher of this book, I feel it will really help a lot of men to heal. Men that struggle with a lot of things in there. Just trying to make it in this world, in this struggle, during these tough times. Struggle with relationships with women, mothers, children. Being a father, being a partner with other men, with other women, and I think of all the things that this book will help, I think a lot of men will find great comfort and healing for themselves.
Sounds good.
So I really encourage both men and women to read it, because I feel that there's elements of the story that will help women that have struggled with different situations. I don't want to give away what situations, so people will read the book, but there is experiences that Coco Pelli encounters and learns along the way about how to treat your fellow human being better.
I sure appreciate you being so supportive, Manny. I know it's that life's not easy for an author on the road.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's not so much the author aspect, but in essence, myself and my children share him with the world, because he's called on for ceremony, and he's basically had people's beck and call for ceremony and for help and healing and counsel, and he will not refuse. You know, many times he's gone without in order for him to fulfill what he feels is his spiritual obligation, and you know, we've had our phones shut off and we've gone through our tough times, but I feel that what his work is here to do is more important than maybe having the comforts and traditional dad at home all the time. That's what we all chose each other as a family unit to be together, because his job was to help others.
Well, let me let me introduce an idea at this point that, you know, nowadays the medicine people and the counselors are the poorest people in the tribe. It used to be they were the richest.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the way, somebody got the idea that, and they say, oh, if you give a medicine person money, you know, it's bad or it's against tradition. Well, how does that work? Because the only money that they had was elk hides, or they bring a quarter of an elk, or gear, or whatever they had. You know, whatever was the point of the realm at the time. And they were well taken care of.
Right.
And now they're almost spit on.
Well, I don't think...
And sometimes are spit on.
I don't think it's that they're spit on, maybe on the internet, but... I don't think it's that they're spit on. I think it's just that people have such a hang up with money, cash. And they don't associate giving a medicine person or a native elder that's given up their time and time away from their family. They don't associate giving them cash with the old days when they give them a hide or a horse or whatever they needed. And let's face it, you know, today our horses are our cars. Our hides are our gas.
Sure.
And,
in the old days, everybody else, all the other guys went hunting, and they left him in there to counsel everybody. You know, if a woman had a problem, oh, you know, my husband's not been treating me well, or so-and-so, and they have somebody to go to, and to work out things, and mediate, and, you know, everybody lived with everything in common, and they would, make sure that he and his family were fed.
Yeah.
But not now. There's so many of them hanging up their feathers. I've talked about this at length with Grandfather Red Elk and others, and it's so sad.
Well, it is sad, and I think it's because of the attitude, and I think, and forgive me for saying this, but I think a lot of it has to do with certain factions of the American Indian movement, and they're wanting to live traditionally. I don't see any of the AIM members that are protesting natives going to ceremonies and being given cash donations for their participation in the ceremonies. And I'm not saying to charge for ceremonies. I'm saying that the people attending voluntarily give the sweat lodge person running the sweat lodge something for their time. Same as they have no problem going to church in some instances and throwing money in the plate. And some kids will put a couple of quarters in the plate, and some people will put $20 in the plate, whatever it takes to get their spiritual upliftment. And there's just been an attitude, and there's been a prostitution of the way. There's been a taking advantage of the way in many ways, in many instances, where it's justified. And people have had to say, well, this is what it's going to cost if you want to be in ceremony.
That's wrong.
And that's the sad part, because they've ruined it for many genuine elders that that really could use the gas money. You know what I'm saying?
No.
And so I think it really boils down to changing people's attitudes towards what it is that they're getting from the benefit of the counsel of this elder. That takes his time out from his family, or is away from his family in order for them to be, have their lives made a little bit better.
And the sad thing is all this was prophesied that this would happen, that even up to the point where the elders wouldn't even know what to say, or they would be afraid to speak at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're there. And you know, and the people that are doing the persecuting are a few people in AIM, it's a very few.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I think there's a lot of aspects of AIM that's good.
Oh, sure. But they themselves, they didn't have a clue. You know, when they were they were city Indians in Minneapolis when they
mm-hmm.
started this whole thing.
Right.
And they went to Crow Dog's grandfather, and, you know, he just looked at them and said, well, you know, have you purified yourselves? And they said, well, what's that? He says, you know, when you get a clue and you get purified, come back. You know, that was,
right.
You know. And now they're the ones that want to be the judge, jury, and executioner.
Yes.
Some literally executioner. You know, like anime and others that have been murdered
right.
by their own people. I mean, what's that?
Well, you know, I don't know if you were aware of this, but both Dennis Banks and Russell Means have endorsed Manny's book, My Road to the Sundance.
Man, that's fantastic.
And that was pretty high praise from, excuse me, and I'm not sure if Clive Belcourt has read it, but I know many A members have come and thanked Manny personally for revealing his journey and his vision through his book, My Road to the Sundance, and how it's helped them on their path, including, I might add, which was really a huge honor for us, the Grand Chief of the First Nations in Canada, Ovid Mercury. He was the Grand Chief, I believe, for 4 terms. And in Canada, the system is much different than here. As you can imagine, they treat their native people much better. But all the tribes in Canada vote on one representative in the government to represent all the tribes. Now, can you imagine that kind of unity down here? Wouldn't that be idyllic?
It sure would.
And powerful. And so,
they got their problems up there, but you know.
Yes, they do, but you know, a lot more treaties have been met and land given back in Canada than I've seen in any other indigenous people in the world. But anyway, the Grand Chief, we met him in Hull, Quebec, at a conference called the Sacred Assembly, and he had been given Manny's book, My Road to the Sundance, and when he found out that Manny was there set up, we were selling our crafts and things, and he met Manny, he said that Manny's book made him proud to be Native. Now, that's pretty high praise. Even Robert Redford sent a letter to the publisher saying that it was an important book of recorded modern history. So, you know, there's a lot of influential people that have been touched by his book, and people from all walks of life, even housewives in the kitchen and Wall Street white-collar workers. It touched people from all ways. And in his new book, Cocopelli's Dream, entwined with Cocopelli's story is some of that same wisdom. It comes through in every book Manny's written. So I'll leave you with that, and I'll
thank you so much.
Put Manny on, and thank you so much for this opportunity. And
he'd have never said anything about all that.
No, he wouldn't, because he doesn't like to chew his own horn, but that's my job.
Okay.
Anyway, much love to you and your family, and all the best of the season to you.
Okay.
Here's his name.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something."
And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Uncle Manny, you've been too humble. I'm finding out about this.
Well, see, the thing about it is, like I said, I have a hard time, toot my own horn, you know, and I've been very thankful, you know, for a lot of the. It's brought a lot of wonderful people into my life since I've gotten into writing, you know, and it's a wonderful journey that I'm on, you know. Unfortunately, I'm getting old, you know, and I don't know how long this is going to go on anymore, so hopefully, as long as I've got the strength and the health to do it, I'm going to keep running Sundance. And it's like I tell the guys, come on, give your best, because I'm not doing it for me, I'm doing it for you guys,
yeah.
You know. And they're a pretty strong bunch of Sundancers, you know, and like I said, they're all Métis, they're all meat blood.
For our own nation. More and more have come to realize that we're our own nation.
Yeah, I've been asked what race I am, I tell them human. From the human race, you know. I heard you, I heard my wife talking with you about this money thing, and I'll tell you, there's so many people prostituting our waste. I mean, actually putting the price of it cost so much for sweat lodge, and it cost so much for Sundance. And I'm not going to get too deep into it because I know that some people do it because of hearsay, not because I've seen it personally. But I'll tell you what, I personally, and I'll say it before God and the world, I have never asked anybody for anything, money, you know, to run a family. I've never done that. I never will. Now, if somebody offers me a donation, I will gracefully take it because,
sure.
Like I told my wife, like he was saying, I don't ever fly to anything. I drive. And I drive my van, and it would really be nice if I could pull up to a gas station and go in and tell a clerk, well, you know, I'm going to say some prayers for you. Can I have a tank of gas?
Funny though.
And I've got to eat, you know, I've become kind of attached to food, you know, it's things like that, you know, and like my wife told you, hey, we've been threatened with, our rent was late, we didn't make a payment and they shut our phone off for 2 or 3 days and why she's had to cry, you know, and plead. You know how the phone companies are. We've been threatened with having our electricity shut off, our cable on our TV was shut off several times because I was doing ceremonies and I wasn't selling any of my past to cover the bills. And some people seem to believe it because I'm spiritual and I'm an elder and I'm a Sundance chief that that I shouldn't have to do anything else, you know. But they don't stop and realize that I got bills just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And another thing I'd like to tell your listeners that I perform native wedding ceremonies. And I have my own way of doing it, and it's a beautiful ceremony. But it was never recognized by the courts because it was an Indian, quote, Indian ceremony. And so I went and I had myself ordained as a reverend. And now with that title, I can go to any county in any state and register and tell them I'm an ordained reverend. Here's my certificate. I would like to register with your court because I have to perform a wedding ceremony here. And they'll put my name down and I'm registered with them. And then I take the papers off and I take them on. I perform the wedding and we fill out the papers, the bride, the groom, and the relatives. And then I go back and register, and it's just as legal as any other church wedding in the country.
Sure.
Well, I've done it for that reason, because I wanted, when I went through that much time and effort and the kids that were getting married are going through all that expense and time and effort, that the ceremony was binding, not only spiritually, but legally. And those of you that read my book know I have a problem with established religion, you know. There's too many of our people have been hurt ever since the Spaniards hit Mexico and the people hit Plymouth Rock, the Europeans. There's been a lot of our people hurt, killed, poisoned. I mean, you name it. And, they tried extermination, you know, all in the name of God, you know, not God, but in the name of Christianity. And so consequently, I'm living way away from that time, but I still harbor a little resentment in that area, you know. I just want nothing to do with established religions, you know. I mean, I respect them. And I honor him. I've had a preacher come into my armor and ask if he can do a blessing on somebody, and I tell him, sure. You know, and I step back. But I'm not going to let him take over the armor. You know what I mean? Because, you know, and some of them do that, and then they start trying to recruit people, and they're saying, hey, back off, bud. You know, I'm going to take a little bit of pride, but you're not going to come in here, you know, and take over. This is a native ceremony. We come out of our way to do it, and this is what it's going to remain, you know. So you see, there's a lot of things that we're fighting right now, you know, that we, not fighting, you know, physically, but the things that we have to put up with. Like, I had a couple of Sundancers that came to our Sundance, and they had nothing with them. They didn't have sleeping bags. They didn't have food, they didn't have clothing. You know what? From some place in all the people that were there, we got them clothes, we got them sleeping bags, we got them a tent, we got them everything to camp out in, you know, and they had plenty to eat for the week and a half that we were there, you know. You know, it's not like we ask people we ask for donations. If they can make it, if they can't, that's fine, they can still come, you know. So, anyway, Blue Otter, how are we for time? And
we got all the time that you want to give.
Okay, well, I'm pretty well. I just want to encourage everybody to, if they want a spiritual uplifting, my book and the Sundance book will do that. And one of the things that I want to say also on Coco Perry's dream, it's a nice little book. It's $10. And the beauty of it is that besides the adventures, which is exciting, there's also a lot of wisdom that came through, a lot of teachings. And one gentleman that read it said, it's amazing how many pearls of wisdom you can find in that book if you look. You know. And I want to encourage people if they want some spiritual uplifting, if they want a message book the spiritual uplifting, of course, it's in the My Book of Sundance, and the good book to read from is in the Book of Faith. Feel free to get on my website and order, and we'll be happy to kind of take it to you and know you want.
Sure. Well, we sure appreciate you being on the show, and let's have you, if you're done, you know, for today, otherwise you keep talking, but we'll sure like to have you back in the spring when you release your new book.
Well, that's a possibility, because it's another good book.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, well, thank you very much for having me on the show, and I wish everybody a nice holiday season, and I wish all of you, because you're all my relations, will be in my prayers, and I run the Fort Myers down in Florida, so may the Creator take care of all of you and protect you and give you good health.
Well, thanks for the blessing, Uncle Manny.
Bye-bye
now.
Bye-bye.
Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Let the truth be known.
kind of him. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper. Let the truth